I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Saturday, October 24th, 2020, and this is episode 91 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So, this week's best thing, sometimes it can be hard to choose. Like, this was a pretty normal week. I made some breakthroughs in my manuscript, and I cut my hair, which is wonderful, although I got a little bit overconfident with the clippers, and I made a significant mistake in my hair cutting, but it will grow back, and I'm still delighted not to have so much hair on my head. But I think for this week's best thing, I'm going to go with I got the synopsis and a good outline done for my new manuscript, the new project that I'm working on. And it's not done, but it's like the first step of, you know, it's the first one where I feel like, okay, if I wrote it this way, it would be okay. I still have a lot of desire to see how I can improve it and make it better. But this is the first thing I felt like, yes, I have a whole thing that feels like a book that I want to write and that I would want to read. And I know the pathway. So, writing update. Getting there has been not too bad. I mean, this has not really been a painful process. It's just been not even that long. Like, I've been working on this very diligently for just over a month. So I turned in maybe almost 2 months, I feel like, because I had those deadlines at the beginning of in September. And so yeah, I guess I've been working on this since the beginning of September, so it's the end of October, so let's call it 2 months. I don't know if that's slow or not, to feel like I have a good handle on the plot, but it seems pretty much par for the course for me. So anyway, this week, what did I work on? I started out working on the characters. So I usually have a really good idea of the main character, usually the heroine, and then if it's most of my books have been hero and heroine as the two main characters, at least the Earthsinger Chronicles, and actually the Angel books have been dual perspective, and then there have been other perspectives also coming in, other points of view. So for this story, I have my heroine, my main character, who I feel like I know really well. I've done a whole character builder profile on her using the One Stop for Writers character builder, and she has come to me really strongly. I know a lot of information about the other characters, but I haven't done that much character work. And a lot of times I don't even bother at this stage. I will wait until after I have a first draft. But I was starting to feel like some of the plot holes that I was coming up against as I was trying to do the outline were because I did not know the hero well enough. And so I was taking some time to just do some character work on him. And I have these five team members. So we have the book that I'm working on now is my 1920s fantasy heist. And so there's five basic characters who are part of this heist. And I've got sort of their archetypes. I know their backstory. I know things about them in bullet point form. I don't know all of their wounds, but I don't know that I need to know them. But I feel like for the love interest, the hero character, I do. And so I started working on the Enneagrams. I had figured out a while before the different Enneagrams that each character will have. And a point of pride for me is that none of them are type 5. So Enneagrams is a personality type. There are 9 Enneagram types, and I will link to some information about them in the show notes. I'm a type 5, the investigator. My main characters are often type 5s. And once I realized that, I was like, okay, let me not write any more type 5 main characters for a while. So I've been pushing myself to just explore different personality types that are not like my own. And so my heroine in this book is a type 8. She's a challenger. And as I was doing research on relationships between the different types, I was like, well, who is the best person in terms of the most conflict, but the most opportunity for harmony also to be in a relationship with a type 8? And according to one source, it's a type 9, which is the peacemaker. And so then I decided that my hero is going to be a peacemaker, and they're going to butt heads in their own way. They're going to come into conflict, I should say, based on their personalities, but also those two personalities also mesh well together once they get over their conflicts. Then I went through and figured out the other personality types for the rest of the team. And so I was thinking about how they would approach situations and, you know, helping to have the character and what they're dealing with inform the plot so that they're really working well together and they're being built at the same time. So it was kind of like, well, I don't know exactly how they're getting from point C to point D, but once I know a little bit more about their characters, then I'll be like, oh, well, this person's going to want to do this and this other person's going to want to do that. And these people are going to come in conflict based on these aspects of their personality and then also aspects of their backstory and, you know, the other things that make up a person that's not just their personality. So I was building character and plot at the same time. And then I started thinking about how am I actually going to tell the story? Am I going to be dual POVs? Is it going to be all five of them get points of view? We're going to tell it from their, you know, kind of alternate between them to tell the story. In my heart, it feels like the heroine's story. It feels like her story. And then I was like, well, there is a strong love story. Is it going to be going back and forth between the two of them? As of today, I don't think so. Like right now, tentatively, I think it might be a single POV book. Now, of course, this is all subject to change, but she's just coming through so strongly and she is like the mastermind of the heist. She's the challenger, you know, Enneagram. She's a strong personality. I have a lot of backstory for her that I want to inform her actions and then come out as needed. And I kind of have a lot of backstory for all the characters, honestly, which helps to make them rich and full, but it's feeling like her story. And I have not done a single POV book, full-length novel before. So that will be interesting if that's actually how it comes. I won't really know until I start to write. The next thing I was thinking of was narrative voice. So you have point of view, like who is telling the story? Well, actually, also with point of view, it's like, which perspective? Is it first person? Is it I or is it she? All the Earthsinger Chronicles books are third person. The Angelborn books are first person. I believe both of them are. I go back and forth in the Cupid Guild between first and third. So how do you pick a perspective? That's a question that a lot of writers will get. You know, how do you know if it's going to be a first person POV or a third person POV? And there's different things that go into that decision. Sometimes it's not a decision. Sometimes it's just, that's how it comes out. Some people are more comfortable writing in one POV than another. I've done both, first and third. And third person allows you to get close. So you can get as close as a first person, but you're just using the different, you're just not using I, you're using she or he. And it also lets you pull back. So a lot of times in books that are third person, you kind of, I think of it in film terms, you're starting with this wide shot and your narrator, your perspective is kind of wide, maybe not completely omniscient, but setting the stage. And then during the course of things, you're going to get closer and closer until you know exactly what that character is thinking. You're hearing the character's thoughts, but then you can also pull the camera back and go into a wider shot. And without head hopping, which I don't like head hopping, it bothers me. And, it's out of vogue now, if it was ever in vogue. I think it was, depending on genre. Head hopping is when you know this person's thoughts, and then you know that person's thoughts, and you know that person's thoughts, but when you're ostensibly supposed to be in one character's POV. So if I take Earthsinger, you know, for example, Song of Blood and Stone, the first book, it starts in Jesmynda's perspective. We're in Jesmynda's head, but it's third person. And we switch. With scenes, I switch perspectives. So then we are in Jack's head. If I'm in Jesmynda's head and suddenly I know what Jack is thinking, when Jesmynda wouldn't know because she's not a telepath, you know, there's ways to make it work. That's head hopping. It's when you're just jumping around and there's no scene break or delineation, because some people don't use scene breaks, but there is a delineation where all of this section is in, you know, person A and then we're switching to person B. So what was I talking about? Anyway, not head hopping, but doing a close third and then coming back to like pulling the camera back. And that is a helpful technique when you're using third person. You don't have that technique in first person. You're always close. I am telling the story in the voice of the character from within them. So you literally can only know what that person knows and sees, and you can't pull the camera back. If you do in first person, it's going to be very strange and it's not going to be authentic. And so that's a tool that is not in your toolbox when you're telling a story in first person. Third person is generally easier unless you're extremely talented with first person. I enjoy using first person, and there are certain genres that lend themselves to the first person POV, like new adult. I felt that when I was writing Angel Born and Angel Fall, their contemporary paranormal romance, their new adult, the first book takes place in a college setting. And so that's sort of an expectation for YA and also for new adult. You can do them in third, but a lot of times they're done in first person. You can do other things in first person too. Like, you can do whatever you want, really. But there's a genre expectation. I don't think there's a genre expectation in, say, epic fantasy for first person. That's going to be a little bit different. People do it. But so yeah, as I think about genre expectation and my own preferences and then just how the story is coming to me, I'm thinking it's going to be third person. So tentatively told from one person's perspective, my heroine, in the third person so that I can use the tool of pulling back since I do have all these people. It's going to be through her eyes, but you know, I can get close and I can get far. Then I was thinking about narrative voice, which is who is telling the story. Am I going to use any kind of narrative device? So a narrative device is, for example, in the fifth season, when she's using second person for part of it, she uses third person for other parts of it. Off the bat, I can't recall if she ever uses first person in those books, but there is a narrative device where using the second person, you do this, you do that. And then in book two, you discover who the narrator is, who is giving the second person narration. And it's actually a character in the book. And that is an extreme form of narrative voice that is masterfully done by N.K. Jemisin because she's a master. And if you're going to try to do something like that, you have to do it with care if you are not a master. But narrative voice is very important. Like in terms of, you know, I'm a Pitch Wars mentor and I've been reading over 100 submissions trying to find our mentee. And when you're reading a lot of things, you know, narrative voice is the thing that stands out to you. It's always hard to describe. It's something that you can't, I guess maybe you can, but it's very difficult to teach. It's something that you know when you see it, and it's very engaging. So there's narrative voice, and then there's narrative devices. And so the narrative device is there a framing story? Is there a narrator who is a character who is telling the story, whether it's in second person or third or whatever? I feel like Jane Austen type of stories where it's omniscient, but you do feel like there is a narrator, an omniscient narrator who is sort of a character who is telling the story and has a personality. And that's also really cool. So I've thought about that. Like, what if it's third person, but it's not necessarily in my heroine's head? There is another character who could be telling the story. And that is something that I might be cool to play with also. So yes, perspective, point of view, narrative voice, narrative devices. A lot of times people just, you know, writers are just intuitively making those decisions. They're not doing it consciously. They sit down to write and it's coming out in first person, or it's coming out with a narrator, or however it comes. I think that's how it will be for me. Like, I'm thinking about it consciously just so I am aware, but it's not like I'm going to make a choice. I'm not going to do like research and like what percentage of books are written in third person? You know, it is going to be mostly intuitive. But I guess intuitive with some thought behind it, or I'm at least considering options, you know. so that I know what I'm doing. Other things in the writing world this week. I have been brainstorming titles. Some books I have a title immediately, although that is a little bit rare for me. I don't know, it might be like 50-50. For the longest time, Song of Blood and Stone was just called Earthsinger Chronicles. And I made a list of almost 200 names, definitely over 100. It might be like more like 150, but between 1 and 200 names, potential titles for the book that I just over the course of weeks until I was able to choose one. And the title that I chose, that I titled it as a self-published book, they kept when St. Martin's took it. So up until now, I've always chosen my own titles. I know that's not always the case with authors who are traditionally published. A lot of times they'll have a working title, and then for various reasons, the title will need to be changed. But I would like to go and give it my best effort. And, you know, I've had good luck with it so far. So I have been, as through the course of my research and my plotting, making a brainstorm list of potential titles. I have one that I really like that is, that comes from a poem. I don't know if it fits the book, but it fits the vibe and like the energy of the book. But I don't want to get my heart too set on it. But I'm afraid my heart is set on it. So I think I have a working title. I have a couple. I'm going to try to come up with like a top three list so that if they're like, nope, that's not going to work, I can be like, well, what about this? And what about this? And there's another one that fits really well, but it's way too on the nose. And yeah, I want to stay away from that one. So thinking about the title. Also, so once I figured I had a good handle on the plot and the outline, like one day it was like, oh, this is it. I've got it. It's perfect. It's great. And then the next day I came back and looked at it and I'm like, oh, it's not quite right yet. And that is incredibly frustrating, as I'm sure that you can imagine. Like, that's the constant challenge. It's like, it happens at all stages. So I haven't even written a word yet, but I know that it will happen when I start writing. I will think, this is going great. This is the best thing I've ever written. And then like literally the next day, I will look back on it and be like, this is trash. No one should read this. I shouldn't write this. I shouldn't write anything. Those are the natural ups and downs. So I know what to expect. I know it happens. It still feels crazy, like as you're going through it, but it's the process. So I did call my brother. He is usually my first reader, and he's a very good person that I brainstorm with. I've been brainstorming with several people, with my husband, my brother, my critique partners, who are my mastermind. But I called on Paul, the character expert, and talked to him through what I was thinking about, and he had some good points that, you know, sometimes it's like you think of a thing, a problem, but you really want to do this thing that you sense might be a problem. And it really takes someone else being, yeah, I don't know about that, to solidify that in your mind. So he brought up some things that I thought were valid and some things that I thought were not valid. And then it sparked an idea for me to get what I want in a way that makes more sense. And I'm being vague because I can't really talk about the specifics yet, because even if I did, they'd probably change. But I tend to overcomplicate things, and I'm trying to simplify and make my life better. But my brain naturally, you know, why have one power when she can have five? Essentially is what it was. And Paul was like, she has too many powers. That doesn't make any sense. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. But I really want her to have this extra power. So I had to figure out how to make it work within the framework of what I was actually doing. And it wasn't five powers. It was actually technically two or three. But so after the conversation, I figured out, I think, a way to make, because I liked that power, you know, like I wanted her to have it, but I didn't want it to be out of sync with everything else and too much and too complicated. He also said something I felt was a good quotable, and talking about character arcs, because by now he understands the way that I sort of go about thinking about character, and he kind of like, well, the way you do, let me think about it the way that you think about it, Leslie. And then he'll kind of quote my way, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly it. I thought that was the way everybody thought about it, but apparently not. So I like to have the internal character arc be responsible for solving the external plot arc. You know, like if you're doing a change character, a character who's going to grow and change, then that growth generally happens, the growth happens over the course of the story, but that point at which they change is the point at which they figure out how to solve the larger external plot problem. And so I was thinking about it one way, but as usual, it was very complicated. And he was like, what he said was, you know, her pot of gold has to match her rainbow, meaning like the thing at the end of the arc has to match the entire arc. And I just thought that made a lot of sense to me, and it was really profound, and it helped me think of things in a different way. And so kind of thinking about, okay, where is she starting? Where is she ending? And his point was that the character arc should match the theme of the novel. And we had sort of identified the theme. And so then it was about going backwards and saying, oh, okay, well, how can I tweak things, the things that I was thinking about, to make the character arc match the theme? And so if, you know, the theme of your book is love conquers all, and then you might have a character who at the beginning is afraid, is closed off, she doesn't want to fall in love, her parents are divorced and it was terrible, and, you know, she refuses. And then she falls in love, but she retreats all the time, and by the end of it, her character has learned to trust herself, trust her partner, fall in love, and then we have the theme that love conquers all. In the middle of that internal arc, there's probably going to be an external arc that backs that up as well. And so talking through the theme, talking through the character changes and the external plot, and working on them all together and making sure they're all, you know, fitting and in synergy and forming a nice braid. And the braid is the book. And that is part of the work of plotting that I do ahead of time and all throughout, because no matter how much I do now, I know that things are going to change as I write it, and I'm going to fall into little holes and get stuck. But this is, for me, the story spine. So if I can come back to, what am I trying to say with this book? That is the theme. I actually have figured out the theme based on writing the synopsis, and the theme was kind of staring me in the face after I had written it all out. It was like, oh, that's what this book's about. And that's what Paul said too, as I was explaining it to him, because he was like, oh, that's what this book's about. And I'm like, yes, exactly, you got it. And then kind of making sure that everyone's journey is matching that. So yeah, that is my writing update. In other news, I started playing Dungeons & Dragons for the first time ever in life. My friend Lisa, shout out to Lisa, and her husband Bob, who is the GM, put together this online game of D&D, and she invited me, and I was like, well, I know nothing. I've never done this. I've always sort of wanted to have wondered about it, because so many fantasy writers start with D&D as kids, and that just wasn't my experience. But she said it's newbie-friendly, and I actually convinced my husband to do it, which is a miracle. But I knew that he was going to bring something unusual to the game, because he is an interesting, unusual person. His personality is probably just chaotic neutral in general. And I was right. He brings a chaotic energy to the game in a good way, I think. But, you know, I'm used to him. And seeing other people's reactions to the way that his mind works is always amusing to me. But yeah, it's been fun. Like, we're, you know, meeting every week to play, and I forget how long it's going to be, how many weeks it is, but yeah, I can see why people really like it. I still feel like I don't, a little unmoored, like I'm not sure what the options are, like what can I do, how exactly does this work, and I'm learning about it, but I am having fun, and I just thought it would be kind of cool to do something else that's fun and creative and that has sparked so many people. And I'm sure there's just countless fantasy novels that have come out of, what was the TV show I was watching? There was a TV show that they were like, yeah, oh no, The Expanse, that's what it was, yeah. The Expanse came out of some kind of role-playing game that the two authors of the books were in, and they were like, yeah, this character who dies early on dies because one of the people playing their role-playing game had to leave and dropped out, and so they had to kill him off. And so in the first season, you're like, oh, wait, that person's really dead? Because it was surprising in the TV show. And so I listened to something, and that's how they explained it. So there's countless speculative fiction media of all kinds that have come out of various role-playing games. And so I thought that it would be nice to experience one for myself. So yeah, that's going, it's going well. I'm also speaking at the Writer's Digest conference, and I'm doing two different sessions. I will link to info about that in the show notes. So if you're interested in my workshop on writing fantasy novels or on organizing your writing life, then definitely check out the conference. There's a lot of other wonderful content that's going to be there, and I'm really excited about attending myself and as I put the finishing touches on these workshops. You can also just go to my website, lpenelope.com/calendar, to find out about all of the events that I'm doing. I'm also teaching another workshop on fantasy world building with the Muse Writer Center, so check those out. Goals for next week. Final prep. I thought about starting to write, and it might be the best decision because I could go over this outline for the next month and find things to change and tweak and make better. And I'm still not sure it's heisty enough, but I don't want to add things just to add them. So writing a first draft is probably the best thing for me to do right now. Maybe I will actually start doing some sprints and starting to write this thing now and not further obsess over the synopsis and the outline. Yes, well, we'll see what happens. Next week, check back and you'll find out. But I hope that you're doing well and staying safe and enjoying the fall that is encroaching upon us very quickly. And I will talk to you next week. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your inbox, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and watch the video episodes on YouTube. I would really appreciate a rating and review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.